For the first 2 days of my visit here, I've been speaking from the third canto of Bhagavatam, Lord Kapila Dev's teachings, to his mother Devahuti. I've been successively going through the first canto, second canto, now well into the third canto. It's sublime. And the topic, principal topic, the last 2 days has been Kapila Dev glorifying and instructing throughout the process of devotional service, Vasudeva Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha, Janayati Ashuvairagyam. And then the verse in the first canto is Gyanam Chayadahaitukam. And then it's this third canto is Gyanam Tad Brahma Darshanam. Through the process of devotional service, one can have realization of the Absolute Truth. Yesterday we discussed the features of the Absolute Truth. So I thought this evening we'd turn it the other way around and discuss something very confidential in the sense that to understand the heart of Krishna is very confidential. So the topic is, what does Krishna feel when someone approaches him in the way that the Bhagavatam describes? Those sections of, there are some sections like that in Bhagavad Gita, and there are sections like that in the Bhagavatam where Krishna is describing what he feels, or the devotees of Krishna are describing what Krishna feels, and to have that realization, very, very confidential. There's a quality or name by which Krishna is known is Bhakta Vatsala. Bhakta Vatsala. Bhakta Vatsala means he who is Krishna is very, very affectionate to his devotees. What we were reading and discussing from Kapila Dev's teaching is how the devotee, by having Brahma Darshanam, having realization of the personality of God, it becomes indifferent to things of this world, duality. Auspicious, inauspicious, favorable, unfavorable, attractive, unattractive, pleasing, not pleasing, and then all the other varieties of duality. Indifferent to duality because of being full in attraction for Krishna. And Krishna's position is stated similarly in Bhagavad Gita. Samaham sarva bhuteshu name dvesho stina priyaha. Krishna's disposition is he's neutral, as the devotee is neutral to duality, but not neutral towards Krishna. And Krishna is neutral towards duality, but he's not neutral towards his devotee. And that looks like partiality. If he's not neutral towards his devotee, then he's partial to his devotee. But he's neutral, so how is this? Dilemma? You see the dilemma? Should I do it again? He's neutral. But towards his devotee, he's not neutral. So it looks like he's not neutral. There's a contradiction. And that's because Krishna is reciprocating with his devotee. Yayatamam prapadyante tang sadaiva bhajam yaham mama vartmanu vartante. Krishna says that all living beings, as they prapadyante, as they surrender unto me, or however they regard me, I reciprocate. So supposing someone says, My name is Kamsa and I want to kill you. I'm your enemy. So what does Krishna say? Oh, you want to be my enemy? Okay, I can be your enemy. He doesn't have adversity towards Kamsa. He's just reciprocating with Kamsa's regard for him. And then there's Vasudeva and Devaki. Because, you know, one moment he's killing Kamsa, and the next moment he's embracing Vasudeva and Devaki. Looks like partiality. But he's reciprocating with the affection or the disposition, the regard that one has towards him. So for one who has towards him the disposition of devotion, Krishna holds that individual very dear. So it's not partiality, it's reciprocation of love or disposition. There's a nice section I want to read from Bhagavad Gita where Krishna describes what he feels when somebody approaches him in devotion. It's the last chapter of the middle section of Bhagavad Gita. There's how many chapters in Bhagavad Gita?
18.
And 18 divided by 3 is?
6.
And 6 plus 6 is?
12.
So at the end of chapter 12, got to keep the kids involved too, you know. At the end of chapter 12, or in chapter 12, he's summarizing the teachings on bhakti. And so the chapter 12 is devotional service. And Krishna describes in chapter 12, say there's 3 sections. One section is Arjuna asks, which is better? Worship of my personal feature, worship your personal feature, or worship of your impersonal feature? Very direct, very clear question, and Krishna gives a direct, clear answer. Worship of my personal feature is better. And he gives 2 reasons why. One is it's completely natural, and the other is completely unnatural. And the other reason is, you get my help. Because if you don't approach me for help, then I don't help. He doesn't interfere. If you don't want his help, he doesn't interfere. So it's very simple math. Which is greater, A or B? A, my own effort. B, my effort plus Krishna's help.
B.
B, it's real easy. Real easy. So devotional service is better. And then the next section, Krishna describes the range of the topmost position of bhakti, down and down and down and down. The topmost position of bhakti is mind completely absorbed in me, intelligence fixed in me. In this way, you will abide in me always, without a doubt. And if you can't do that, follow the regulations of bhakti yoga, and you'll develop the qualifications for that standard. If you find following the regulations of bhakti yoga difficult, then try to work for me. If you find that difficult, and it goes down and down, it starts going back up again. But the essence is devotional service. And then what Krishna describes is how he regards one who is engaged in his devotional service. Very confidential and very sublime. Starting with text 13. One who is not envious, but is a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor, and is free from false ego, who is equal both in happiness and distress, who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind and intelligence fixed on me. Such a devotee of mine is very dear to me. Next. He, by whom no one is put into difficulty, and who is not disturbed by anyone, who is equipoised in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, is very dear to me. He just goes on saying what he's feeling. My devotee, who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities, who is pure, expert, without cares, free from all pains, and not striving for some result, is very dear to me. One who neither rejoices nor grieves, neither laments nor desires, and who renounces both auspicious and inauspicious things, such a devotee is very dear to me. Krishna has feelings. He's not only he's a person, but he has feelings. And it goes on, several more verses of who is very dear to him. And the one who is very, very dear is one who teaches this teaching of devotion to others. Very, very dear to me. No one more dear to me than that person. So, Krishna's name, one of Krishna's names is Bhakta Vatsala. And I wanted to, something from Krishna within Vrindavan, something from Krishna outside of Vrindavan, how Krishna's devotee is very dear to him. Just like Rupa Goswami, when he was living in Vrindavan, he knew that his elder brother Sanatan Goswami was visiting Lord Chaitanya in Puri, because Lord Chaitanya's headquarters were in Puri. So he planned that he would go visit Lord Chaitanya while his brother was there. And he's living in Vrindavan. So he, being empowered by Lord Chaitanya to teach the science of devotional service, he began in his mind composing a drama that would teach the science of devotional service, how Krishna reciprocates lovingly with his devotee. He made his travel, and he wasn't writing because he was traveling. He was composing verses in his mind. It was like a meditation, a prayer, and he would say them over and over again and over and over again and over and over again. It was a meditation while traveling. He got to a place that's near Jagannath Puri. In fact, when we visit Jagannath Puri for yatras, we go to this place, Satyabhamapur. It's a village outside of Puri, in between Bhubaneswar and Puri. And when he reached Satyabhamapur, he had a dream. And in his dream, Satyabhama appeared in his dream, and Satyabhama instructed him, don't just write one drama, write two dramas, separate Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan and Krishna's pastimes outside Vrindavan in a dream. So he didn't say anything to anyone, but he took it as an instruction. Satyabhama is instructing me, how fortunate. So he continued to Puri, and when he reached Puri, he started writing the verses down. And Lord Chaitanya inquired about what Rupa Goswami, how is he spending his time? Rupa Goswami is composing a drama, because he hadn't said two dramas, he's composing a drama. Some time later, Lord Chaitanya, in the course of discussion with Rupa Goswami, say, I hear that you're writing a drama, but it should be two dramas. one with Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan and outside Vrindavan. And he gave him some instructions on how to do that. With that, Rupa Goswami could understand that Lord Chaitanya was omniscient. He knew without having to ask him. He just knew. And it also confirmed that this wasn't just my imagination, it was Satyabhama instructing me. So he began composing two dramas. And when the dramas were nearly completed, Lord Chaitanya wanted Rupa Goswami to give a recitation, a little recital on the verses from his writing. So he said, I'm going to bring some devotees tomorrow and be prepared to present your writing. And when Lord Chaitanya came with Ramananda Roy and Srup Damodar and many other exalted, Ramananda Bharati and Paramananda Puri and many other devotees just to hear, they all sat together and Rupa Goswami sat off at a distance. And Lord Chaitanya invited him, come sit with the rest of us. But he remained silent. And because of his humility, he couldn't. So he didn't. He stayed at a distance because of an intense humility within his heart. So then Lord Chaitanya requested Ramananda Roy, you're very expert in drama, as is Rupa Goswami, so you invite him to recite different verses. So he asked him first, recite the invocation verse. And when Rupa Goswami described the invocation verse, everyone was astonished. It's such a nice verse. It's written twice in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's describing the holy name. And he describes the holy name in this way. When I chant the holy name, I wish to have thousands and thousands of tongues, so the holy name will dance on my tongue. And when I hear the holy name, I wish to have thousands and thousands of ears to hear the sound of the holy name. And when the sound of the holy name enters into the chamber of my heart, forget how the conclusion of the verse goes, but an ecstasy erupts, something that brings great jubilation to the heart, something far more eloquent. And everyone was astonished. They said, we've never heard a glorification of the holy name like this, because it was not just poetic, it was what his experience is when he's chanting. It's described in Madhurya Kandambani by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. When one comes to the stage of bhava, just before the stage of prema, these symptoms that Rupa Goswami writes about are the symptoms that one experiences. One wishes to have thousands of eyes and thousands of ears and thousands to see Krishna, to hear Krishna. When I smell the fragrance of Krishna's body, I wish to have thousands of noses. it's not like becoming a disfigured person. It's the senses become fully animated in ecstatic expression, wishing to bring in, to drink in through the ears or through the eyes, through the nose, through the sense of touch, the experience of being in Krishna's presence. But it all starts with the proper chanting. So as Rupa Goswami, under the order of Satyabhama and Lord Chaitanya, made this Vidagdha Madhava and Valita Madhava, Krishna in Vrindavan, Krishna's pastimes in out of Vrindavan. I'll also describe something about Krishna's quality of Bhakta Vatsala, both in Vrindavan and outside of Vrindavan. One of the pastimes outside of Vrindavan that's I particularly like is Krishna's affection upon Bhishma Dev. Bhishma Dev, Krishna has so many wonderful devotees, but Bhishma Dev was one. Very, very loving devotee of Krishna. Because of Bhishma Dev's love for Krishna, he naturally had special affection for the Pandavas. Now he's on the standard of devotion that he's na me dvesho sti na priyaha. He's not kind to some and having adversity to others. And he demonstrated that. He fought on the side of the Kauravas, even though he knew the behavior that they were doing was bad. He knew what the behavior was, and he knew it was bad, and he still fought on their side. Because he was following principles of Dharma, because he was being maintained by the royal family. He was being maintained by the royal family because he was royal family. But he had taken a vow to not marry, and so he wasn't king, but he actually should have been the king. So he was maintained by the royal family. And because he was maintained by the royal family, he was obliged to fight on behalf of the royal family, those who were maintaining him. Even though he didn't agree with their scruples or their character. One religious principle was that religious principle, so he fought on their side. But there's another reason why he fought on their side, a transcendental reason, and that was his rasa with Krishna. There are five primary rasas, and there's seven secondary rasas. The five primary rasas are, anybody know? Neutrality, servitorship, friendship, parental affection, and conjugal love. Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya. Five principal rasas. So of those rasas, which one was Bhishma Dev? Dasya. Although he was elder, his mood was Dasya. And there are seven secondary rasas. And one of them is chivalry. And Bhishma Dev sometimes felt this rasa of chivalry, and the nature of the science of rasa, this is Rupa Goswami's teachings. The five primary rasas are always there, one of the five for each jiva. And the secondary rasas enhance the feelings of love by sometimes the secondary rasas eclipse and seem to predominate. But one should understand behind that is the primary rasa always. So Bhishma Dev had the secondary rasa of chivalry, which means that it was an ecstasy for him to be on the opposite side of Krishna and fight with Krishna, and Krishna would win. But he would give him a good fight in the mood of chivalry. And he did that in the Kurukshetra battlefield when Bhishma, who never breaks his vow, by a trick of Krishna broke his vow. How strong is Bhishma Dev's vow? It's so strong. Brihat Vrata, such a strong vow, that his father, I will not become the king and I will not marry, therefore, O father of Satyavati, please give your daughter in marriage to my father. And he upheld that for the rest of his life. So his father gave him the benediction. You don't have to die unless you choose to. His father must, Santana must have been very powerful just to utter those words. Presto. He was, for his life, protected from having to die. So he upheld that vow, even in the face of, he gives this whole description to the to Maharaj Yudhisthira and the Pandavas. One time during, towards the end of the battle, they couldn't defeat Bhishma. So they went to Bhishma and asked him, how can we defeat you? And he told them, here's how you can defeat me. You should have asked long ago. I would have told you. Sikandi. And he told the whole story. I'm not going to tell the whole story because that would be the whole evening. He's just telling the Sikandi story. But Sikandi, in his earlier in his life, was born a woman. And prior life was Amba, the sister of Ambika and Ambalika. And there's the whole narrative about how what went on. She took a vow that she was going to kill Bhishma. So she got a benediction from Lord Shiva. In your next birth, you'll take birth and you'll kill Bhishma. You'll be the cause of Bhishma's death. And he disclosed the whole thing to the Pandavas. Just put Sikandi out in the front and I'll put down my weapons because I'm not going to fight. Then you can kill me. Because he won't break his vow. Even when Parashuram, because Amba went and, you know, started crying. One of the woman's best weapons is her tears. She started crying before Parashuram, and he said, I'll instruct Bhishma Dev. You let me know which one do you want, Shalva or Bhishma Dev to marry you. She said, I want either one to marry. I want Bhishma Dev to die. So he said, well, I'm not going to do that, but I'll instruct him. Either you marry her or you fight me. So Bhishma Dev said, I don't break my vow. You're giving me an instruction to break my vow, and I have to decline that instruction. So let's fight. And Bhishma, Parashuram was unable to defeat Bhishma. How powerful is Bhishma? He never breaks his vow. And he who never breaks his vow was prompted by Duryodhana, who said, you're not fighting strongly enough because you have affection for the Pandavas. You're our general. You agreed to be our general. And you never break your word, but you're not fighting to your full capacity. All right. Tomorrow, here's five arrows. With these five arrows, I'll kill the five Pandavas. Give them to me in the morning, and by the end of the day, the five Pandavas will be dead. Good, very good. Duryodhana was very happy. He said, sleep well. But Krishna is omniscient. And Krishna knew what had just taken place. So he called Arjuna and said, Arjuna, do you remember way back when, long, long ago, when you were still in exile, the 12th year in exile, and Duryodhana, you rescued Duryodhana from the Gandharva Chitrasen? Do you remember that? And so that's a whole other... Duryodhana wasn't satisfied just that the Pandavas were in exile. He wanted to humiliate them on top of insult. So So he went with his army to the place where he knew where they were. And his intention was to ridicule them. I'm the king with his whole army. So he went to a lake and was planning to enter into the lake with his damsels and his royal party and do hunting and, you know, have a king's party. As the soldiers had gone towards the lake to prepare things for the king to come, there was a group of Gandharvas headed by Chitrasen. And the Gandharvas encountered the representatives of the king and said, you're here from the heavenly planets. Tell the person who sent you to go back home, because we're here enjoying this wonderful lake. So the representatives went back and told the king, this is what the Gandharvas said. I'm the king. I'm the ruler of this whole planet. Who can tell me to mass the armies and go and attack the Gandharvas? He was puffed up. Immediately, just triggered. And they knew that the Gandharvas were incredible warriors, so they armed themselves to the hilt and went and did very intense battle. And thousands of Gandharvas were killed. So intense was it that Chitrasen personally came and he totally annihilated the armies of Duryodhana and personally arrested Duryodhana and had him all tied up and had the brothers of Duryodhana tied up by others and captured their wives. Some of the Kauravas escaped. They went on their royal chariots to the other side of the lake where Yudhisthira was engaged in a sacrifice, a yajna. Draupadi was by his side, and the charioteers came and began making a please help us. Bhishma said something very chivalrous, something that could have been very difficult for us in battle is now taken care of without any effort on our own. They're all captured. Great. Let them be destroyed. They deserve it. But Yudhisthira took the high road and said, they're our cousins and we're being sought for shelter. How can a Kshatriya decline shelter when someone seeks shelter? And Arjuna stood up and said, I will go at once, and whoever these people are that are interfering, they will face the might of the sons of Pandu. So they went in big battle, and Arjuna was prevailing, and his other brothers were also vigorously fighting. So much so that Chitrasen came before Arjuna and said, basically, peace, brother. I was sent here by Indra because Indra knew that Duryodhana, on top of after everything else wicked that he's done, now he's come specifically to add insult to injury. And Indra advised me, capture them, bring them before me, and I'll punish them severely. So that was the intent. And Arjuna said, but my brother said that you should release Duryodhana, so you have to release Duryodhana. And he said, well, he didn't, Yamraj or Yudhisthira didn't know the wicked intent of why they came here. Let me explain it to him and we'll accept whatever he says. He explained everything and Yudhisthira said, let them go. And is there anything that we can do to serve you? So Chitrasen was very impressed, very appreciative of the neutrality and the magnanimity of Yudhisthira. And so Duryodhana was released. And Duryodhana, being obliged to the effort of Arjuna to save his life, he offered him ask for me anything you'd like, and it's yours. And Arjuna said, I don't need to ask anything. Maybe sometime later I'll ask something. And that was the circumstance that Krishna was aware of. So Krishna said, because he's given you this commitment, a kshatriya keeps a commitment, go to his tent tonight. Don't wait till the morning. Go right now and ask, remind him of this promise that he made, and then ask him for 5 arrows. You don't have to know what's behind it. Just ask him for those 5 arrows. So Arjuna went. And when he reached Duryodhana's tent, Duryodhana was very surprised to see Arjuna. And said, why have you come, my dear cousin? It must be that you have some desire. If you like, sarcastically, he said, just ask me for the kingdom without a fight and it's yours. And Arjuna said, I don't want the kingdom without a fight. I'm happy to fight. But I just want those 5 arrows that Bhishma gave to you. Can I have them, please? So Duryodhana was flustered, because these are the 5 arrows that had killed the Pandavas. So he immediately gave them to Arjuna. And he asked him, how did you know about the arrows? That Krishna told me. So in the morning, when Duryodhana went to pay his respects to Grandfather Bhishma, Grandfather Bhishma said, let me have those 5 arrows. And Duryodhana said, unfortunately, I can't give you those 5 arrows because I gave them to Arjuna. And Bhishma immediately understood. I, who have never broken my promise, have just broken my promise because of Krishna's tricks. So I make a vow that Krishna will break his promise, or I will kill Arjuna, his dear most friend, by the end of the day. And so hearing that, everyone was all fired up. Arjuna is going to be killed by Bhishma. And Bhishma fought so intensely, that by the end of the day, it looked like Arjuna was finished, with his chariot broken, and Bhishma's firing arrows, and Krishna's standing in the way and catching the arrows in his chest. The Bhagavatam describes Krishna's body was all bloody. Now Krishna, we know from Ishapanishad, that Krishna doesn't have he has no veins. Not only has no physical body, we know from Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has no physical, like we have the soul inside that's animating the body outside. But Krishna has no inside outside. It's all spiritual. What's the verse where Krishna says, so, foolish people, avajananti mam mudha manushim tanam ashritam. Manu means human-like. Foolish people think that I've assumed a form like theirs, a human-like form like theirs. They do not know. Param bhavam ajananto. They don't know my higher nature, which is changeless and supreme. Krishna's body is all spiritual. Satchit ananda vigraha. So there's no veins. But he was showing his body was bloody. Just for Rasa's purpose. And what Krishna was experiencing wasn't, oh, and here's an arrow. He was experiencing ecstasy. He was experiencing ecstasy. Sometimes the expression of our acharyas is that sometimes, just like lover and beloved, they may bite. But it's a love bite, and it's not, oh, you bit me. Someone else bites you, it's like, you better watch out. But Krishna took it that way. It was an expression of love from Grandfather Bhishma. His chivalrous rasa, behind which was his dasya rasa, he's serving Krishna in that way. And then when Bhishma Dev managed to get around Krishna and started firing arrows directly at Arjuna. Krishna picked up the chariot of Arjuna and started rushing at Arjuna. With, it's a beautiful description in the Bhagavatam, with beads of perspiration coming down his forehead, which was made ashen in color by the hooves of the horses on the battlefield. Blood on his front side, his upper garment streaming behind him because he was moving at such speed. With his arm raised like a Sudarshan Chakra, but instead as the broken wheel of Arjuna, ready to smash Bhishma Dev. He who promised I will not fight broke his promise to smash Bhishma Dev just to protect his devotee, Arjuna. And just at that moment, the conch blew at the end of the day and fighting is over. Because when the sun sets, that's it. So Bhishma Dev dropped his weapons. Ecstatic. Krishna broke his promise. He showed his quality of Bhakta Vatsala. More important to Krishna than his word of honor is his another word of honor. I'll always give protection to my devotees. That's the topmost of important things for Krishna. Everything else is lesser important than that one thing. Topmost thing. The importance of affection for Krishna. Affection for his devotees. That's Bhakta Vatsala. So in the rasa, the servant, Bhishma Dev, was giving pleasure to Krishna through chivalrous rasa. The purpose of that chivalry was to increase the happiness of Krishna, because a devotee doesn't do anything other than for the happiness of Krishna, although it may look like it's against. He's ready to kill Arjuna, his dearmost friend, but he knows, he explained, no one can kill Arjuna. Not like he's immortal, but he has Krishna on his side. Like Sanjaya says at the end, wherever there's Krishna, Arjuna, victory is certain. Opulence is certain. And Krishna is Bhakta Vatsala. There's two others. One is Krishna inside Vrindavan. And there's so many because of the loving nature of Krishna that he loves his devotees so much that, for example, when the cowherd boys, on the pretext of herding cows, they're actually just playing in the forest, they're having fun. They're playing leapfrog and wrestling and so many games. Making the sounds of the birds and jumping like the frogs and moving their arms like peacocks and swinging from trees and just playing games because they're little children. But the cows have such affection for Krishna, they don't go anywhere. They just, wherever Krishna goes and Balaram goes, they go with them. That's how they herd the cows. So sometimes when they have wrestling arrangements, Krishna loses. He who with one finished Kamsa, he's almighty. But he loses wrestling matches with the cowherd boys. Because it's just loving affection. And when Krishna loses, or whoever loses, the loser has to carry the winner on his shoulders. They take them for a piggyback ride or a shoulder back ride. So Sudama is quoted in Nectar Devotion as saying, what kind of a big man is Krishna? He can't even defeat us in a wrestling match. Because it's just his affection. He likes to lose to his devotees and carry them on his shoulders, and they're the victor. In Vrindavan, there's a very nice description of very beautiful verse where Uddhava speaks about the nature of Krishna's affection, that even one does the smallest, slightest amount of service, Krishna becomes indebted to that devotee. Uddhava speaks of putana. You know this verse. Vidura has met Uddhava just after Uddhava heard Uddhava Gita and Krishna left the world. And Uddhava knew. He was feeling so intensely absorbed in separation from Krishna that Uddhava started asking, how is Krishna? How is Balaram? How is Ugrasena? Vasudeva and Devaki? What are you doing here in the forest in Vrindavan anyways? So when he started to speak about Krishna, one of the first things that he said, who could have a better master than Krishna? Krishna is such a wonderful master that although Putana came with the intention of killing him, because she also saw, as a mother sees a child with affection, she saw Krishna and wanted to give him her milk, Krishna accepted that service. And after Putana was killed, she attained the same position as Mother Jasoda in the spiritual world. She became an eternal associate, a maid servant, assisting Mother Jasoda in Goloka Vrindavan. Who could find a better master than Krishna? And then there's another final one. In Brihat Bhagavatamrita, those of you that are not so familiar with that, it's a very wonderful literature written by Sanatan Goswami, and it's been translated by the BBT translators. And it's a, one way of describing it, it's a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam written by Sanatan Goswami. It's very, very unique kind of commentary. It's presenting what the essence of the Bhagavatam is, and it's in two parts, and it's about that thick with the commentary, the three parts. It's very, very nice. So in the second part, there's the main character is Gopa Kumar, a cowherd boy, and he's in the search for the lord of his deity. He receives from a Brahmin in Vrindavan, because he's a cowherd boy in Vrindavan. He receives from a Brahmin a mantra, a Madan Gopal mantra. And he's on his quest to find Madan Gopal. And, you know, this many pages later, he makes it to Goloka Vrindavan. And when he gets to Goloka Vrindavan, he has to get to Goloka Vrindavan by transcendental arrangement. He goes soaring through space, through all the planetary systems, through the coverings of the universe, into the Brahmajyoti, brilliant spiritual sky effulgence, passing many Vaikuntha planets, and ends up where he doesn't know where he is. And so he goes up to the people that are inhabitants there, and he asks them, what is this place? And who's the head person here? And nobody will talk to him. He's thinking, am I offensive, or are they rude, or what's happening? And person after person after person, no one even responds to him. And then finally, one old lady responds. And she says, this is Goloka. This is the abode. This is the place where Krishna is in charge. And no one will talk to you because they're feeling such pain of separation because Krishna's gone to the forest to herd the cows. And they're feeling such separation they can't even speak. But very soon Krishna will come back. The sun is beginning to come down. Oh look, you see all those people? They're running like the wind in that direction. That means Krishna is coming from the forest. Very soon you will see him. So Gopal Kumar sees all the residents of Vrindavan running in that direction. He starts moving in that direction. He finds himself also running in that direction. And then he hears the sound of buffalo horns and conch shells. Krishna's announcing to the residents of Vrindavan that he's coming. And then next he sees in the distance a cloud of the dust from the hooves of the cows. Then he sees the many, many cows. And then he sees the cowherd boys. And then he sees Krishna. And he starts running, calling out, Madan Gopal! That's Krishna, by the way. The attractive cowherd boy. He's one who steals one's mind away. The cowherd boy who steals one's mind away. Madan Gopal! And he's running and running with his arms outstretched. And Krishna sees him and he starts running towards Gopal Kumar with his arms outstretched. And they come to the same place and they embrace one another and Madan Gopal, Madan Gopal. He's sobbing and weeping, and Gopal Kumar sobbing and weeping, and they both faint on the ground. And then Madan Gopal comes to external consciousness, and Krishna is still on the ground, unconscious. And Balaram comes and starts chastising him. Just see what you've done. You've made Krishna become unconscious. He gets on his case. And others say, no, it's okay. Krishna was happy to see Gopal Kumar here. Then finally Krishna comes to external consciousness and he says, I have been waiting for you for so long. I thought, maybe in this lifetime he'll come back. But you didn't come back. And then I thought, maybe in the next lifetime he'll come back. But you didn't come back. And I was waiting and waiting, and finally I came myself. That person who gave you your mantra, the Madan Gopal mantra, that was me. I came to become your spiritual master and give you the mantra that would then bring you back here. And at last you've come back. I am so happy. Please, never go away again. Gopal Kumar says, I'll never go away again. So what to speak of the devotee being very eager to be with Krishna again. Krishna is disclosing his eagerness to have his devotee come back to him again. Prabhupada described on several occasions, when you take one step towards Krishna, he takes 100 steps towards you. Krishna is more eager for us to be with him in the spiritual world 100 times more than we are to be with Krishna in the spiritual world. Because Krishna is Bhaktivatsala. He loves his devotee. He has great affection for his devotee. And if we just show a little affection to Krishna 100 times amplified, Krishna reciprocates. The problem is we're so covered. We're so dense, so thick, so hard-headed and hard-hearted, so misdirected and lazy and Kali-Yugaized. Certified Kali-Yugaized. That it's difficult for us. But Krishna is very patient. Krishna doesn't interfere. But if we turn to Him, recognizing how loving He is. How loving He is. We couldn't find a more loving and lovable personality than Krishna. Suhridam sarvadehinam. Krishna says the platform of peace is to recognize he's the dearmost friend. We all want friends. It doesn't mean you can't have other friends, but have other friends in relation to your dearmost friend, and put that dearmost friend in the center of your friendships with others, and it becomes the best friendships, whatever those relationship, servitor, friendship, conjugal, or parental affection. Put Krishna in the center. And that can apply to anything. It can apply to your japa. It can apply to your work. It can apply to your family. It can apply to your internal life, your external life. Whatever it is that life is made up of. Make Krishna your dearmost friend because he's so lovable and so loving. He'll give us everything. Personally, give us everything. And especially give us himself in that exchange of loving dealing. So now back to Lord Kapila Dev's teachings to Devahuti. He's teaching, take up that position where there's exclusive, direct, unmixed association with the personality of Godhead in devotional service. And then this is, and what will Krishna feel? And what will Krishna do? From his side, that's very confidential. Very confidential. And Krishna, he has unlimited qualities, but one of those primary qualities, 64 qualities mentioned in Nectar Devotion, is he's very expert. So when Krishna does something, he reciprocates with one devotee. He's simultaneously doing so many things, reciprocating with so many devotees. One other last pastime that comes to mind I really like. Towards the end of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, Krishna is still in Dwarka. And there's one devotee way off in the faraway distance place, King Bahulashva, who has never seen Krishna, but he's a great devotee of Krishna. So Krishna decides he's too occupied in his kingdom. He can't come see me. I'll go see him. So he arranges for a whole royal entourage to go purposely to go visit King Bahulashva. But as Krishna is going to visit King Bahulashva, there's many places he stops along the way, and Krishna gives his association to those kings and the persons in the kingdom, and because Krishna is doing many things at the same time as he's doing one thing. And when he gets to King Bahulashva's kingdom, there's another devotee, a great brahmana, Shrutadev, and both of them come to greet at the edge of the king, the royal city where Bahulashva, where he resides. They both come and they both make the same request. Please come and visit my home. I'd like to offer you a meal. So Krishna expands himself into two Krishnas and goes to both places at the same time because he's Bhakta Vatsala. There's no limit. If Krishna loves one devotee, it's not like he's too busy and he doesn't have time for another devotee. Krishna is not limited. He doesn't have to divide himself into or expand himself into two Krishnas. But he did in that circumstance, and just like 16,000 Krishnas. 16,108 expansions of Krishna. And then in the morning, when he would rise and perform his morning duties and worship the Supreme, which was himself, then he would go to the assembly house. Those 16,000 Krishnas all amalgamated into one Krishna. They went into the assembly house and sat by the side of Ugrasena. And then it's time to go back and 16,000 Krishnas manifest. He's reciprocating with his devotees out of love. When Narada goes to visit Dwaraka, he's astonished. Because in each of the places, each of the palaces in Dwaraka, not only there's 16,000 Krishnas in each one of them, one in each of those palaces, but he's doing different things at the same time. In Rupa Goswami's writings, in Lalita Madhava, he describes his different times of the day at the same time. Sometimes he's putting the children to rest. Sometimes he's having his meal. Sometimes he's getting up in the morning. And it's just different things to reciprocate with it. Because he's not... He has no restriction. Besides, he has complete freedom. He's simply reciprocating with the love of his devotees. Because that's what Krishna does. That's who he is. All of his pastimes are simply reciprocation of love with his devotees. To attract the hearts and the minds of those who are his devotees to appreciate. What a loving person is Krishna. Why would I go anywhere? But with Krishna. He's so wonderful. At the same time, he's neutral. He doesn't interfere, that is to say, he doesn't interfere with our free will. He's inviting us. Sarvadharmam Pratyaja Mame Kam Sharanam Braja. He's sending representatives. Please turn your attention to Krishna. In every possible way, he's giving us opportunity, but he doesn't interfere with our free will, because love is a free will affair. We have to make a choice. And we made a choice. I want to be separate from Krishna, so here we are. And if we make a different choice that says, I want to be with Krishna, he will reciprocate. And we want to be directly, as Kapila Deva is instructing Devahuti, directly in his association, he'll reciprocate. And up to what the Kapila Deva's teachings were is unmixed devotion. Nothing else. Like I said, squeaky clean. Nothing else. Just pure love for Krishna. Service that's unobstructed by anything of this world. There's always things of this world. But devotion is stronger. Just like light is stronger than darkness. Devotion is stronger. You can serve Krishna in any situation, in any capacity. Just take that position of stay fixed in his wanting to be with him, wanting to be in service to him. You always find some service. And minimally, something you can do in any circumstance is chant the holy name. Even the most difficult circumstance. We're very fortunate to have this Krishna's kindness being so liberally given to us by our spirit, by Disciplic Succession and our founder Acharya and all the devotees who are following this process. We're very, very, very fortunate. Just reach out and take that good fortune. Well, here we are again, 9 o'clock. Any discussion or comments? Yes?
I have a friend, and she's Christian, and we often talk spiritual subjects.
Okay.
She likes to say my God, but she likes to tell me how Jesus or God reciprocates with her. And my question would be, in how somebody approaches Krishna, he reciprocates with them. Can that be also extended to different religions? And I remember traveling.
Of course.
As a young girl.
Certainly.
How I would feel different things, or like, you know, people that we travel with and say, "Oh, God did this and God did that," but they didn't have a singular path.
That's part of God's reciprocation. Yayatamam prapadyante. As they all living beings. So the answer is yes. Follow my path in all respects. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Anything else? Yes? Hare Krishna.
More like the third canto, like when Kapiladeva like explaining to Devaki, he explains Vasudeva and Dwarkadish. Vasudeva is with internal, without internal potency, and Dwarkadish is with internal potency.
Where is that?
It's in the third canto. In the Purport Prabhupada was explaining, like, we need to pray for Vasudeva to progress in the spiritual path.
Okay.
So Vasudeva is without internal potency.
I'd like to see the reference. I'd like to see the reference.
Yeah.
So you want to ask, what does that mean? Because I...
Yeah.
Okay. I'd have to see the reference.
Okay.
You got your little device, right? Well, he's looking up on his device. Anyone else? Yes?
Thank you very much. The Lalita Madhava and the Dr. Madhava, is there a translation available?
It's being worked on. There must be. The BBT translators at Govardhan, that was one of their works that they were planning, or I think are still planning. I would be very careful. I would recommend being very careful what translation you get your hands on, because it could be something that's not so carefully done. Bhakti Chaitanya Swami gave me something of a translation, so I don't yet. It might be Kusukratas, and Kusukratas translations were fast and sloppy. You know, the essence is there, but you know, not so accurate. Okay. Well, it looks like it's prasadam time. Been nice spending 3 days with you here in Portland and Salem and Corvallis and Hillsboro and the area. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.